Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Today we're going to talk, of course, USC football. That's what we do every day, every week, every waking minute here at the Peristyle Podcast. And you guys sent in a lot of questions, a lot of concerns after USC's 17-3 loss up on the farm at Stanford. We're going to talk about that with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for us here at USCFootball.com. We're going to have a special guest. He was the sideline reporter for Fox Sports a little bit later on in the show. Bruce Feldman, friend of the program, he's joining the show. We were trying to get him on over the weekend at our live show. If you haven't seen that, make sure you go check it out. It's Tunnel Vision, and we do that every Thursday and every Sunday night. But we'll have Bruce on a little bit later on. He got some interesting insights from being on the sideline calling that game. If you have any questions or comments, podcast at uscfootball.com is the email address, or you can call us at 424-254-9141. You can call or text that number. We got voicemails, we got text, we got emails up the wazoo. And luckily we have Keely here producing the show, helping us out with that. What's up, Keely?
Hello, hello.
Follow her on Twitter at Keely is my name. And then the man of the hour, Dan Weber. This is probably the most questions we've ever received. And I say that a lot, but it's
really that much?
Pages of them. Pages and pages.
That's true.
Dan Weber's on the line. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
Hey, well, that's the problem, because I think we went into the Stanford game thinking we got a lot of questions, but maybe we're going to get some answers. Unfortunately, the Stanford game generated more questions. So on top of the questions we already had, now we've got more questions and not nearly enough answers, but we'll try.
Yeah, we'll try. We're going to do our best, and I apologize. We're going to send leftover questions to Dan. He writes columns every week with them and does a great job with that. But we're going to do our best to get to as many as we can. Before we jump into it, of course, USC is going to go on the road and take on Texas. You're talking about two blue blood programs. Football is back when you got USC and Texas. Do you need tickets? Because the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long is SeatGeek. If you're looking for a last minute deal, which you would be for this weekend, or if you're just going to plan a night out or find the perfect gift, SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, especially you're talking about Austin. SeatGeek will help you get closer to the action for a great value. So every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can go shop on the app, SeatGeek.com, with confidence. And it doesn't end with sports. You can get tickets for concerts, comedy, theater, stuff like that. So I got the SeatGeek app up right now on my phone. It's really easy to find tickets for USC Texas or any of the USC games or any other event you'd like to. Just go to SeatGeek, buy your tickets for Texas. If you want to talk about the Washington State game coming up on Friday night, any of those, you can go to the SeatGeek app and find them. And best of all, my listeners are going to get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. If you just download the app and enter promo code USC, that's promo code USC, you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life at an event. Life's an event. We have the tickets. All right, Dan. I don't know. I'm a little encouraged. I thought people might be bummed about the Stanford game, but I got a lot of RSVPs. We're going to do a little meet and greet happy hour Friday at the Key Bar in Austin, Texas. It'll start at 3:30 p.m. local time. Just put it up last night. We got a lot of people that are RSVPing already, Dan. So maybe the fans aren't jumping off cliffs and doom and glooming it all over the place that we thought they might.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you're going to the Texas game, maybe they're going to look forward more to being at the Key Bar than at the Darrell K. Royal Field the next day. I don't know. I mean, make it worth your while. Austin's a great place to go. Meet and greet and hit the high spots. And sounds like a great way to get the weekend started and see what happens on Saturday. But yeah, that's great. I had a feeling there'd be a lot of people want to do that. That's a great idea. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'll be there. Dan will be there. Keely will be there. Shotgun's not getting in until Saturday, I believe.
Saturday morning.
Yeah. But the three of us will be there. We're going to have Taylor Estes from Horns 24/7. She'll be there as well. I think Chip Brown is going to come too. We're going to have a show with Chip Brown tomorrow, previewing Stanford. I'm flying out tomorrow and somehow doing like two podcasts before we go out. I mean, there's a lot of crap going on here. Not crap, but there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot going on.
So much content.
There's so much going on. It's absolutely insane. And we'll do our live show from, Keely and I will be in Austin. So we'll do a live show, Tunnel Vision there. We're going to do one on Sunday where Keely will be back home and remoting me in, and Shotgun and I will still be in Austin. So there's a lot packed into this game. Hopefully it goes a little bit better than what it went at Stanford. And there's a lot of people, Dan, that are not really happy with the way the Stanford game went. I think I'm going to start you off with a voicemail and we'll go from there.
Hey, Ryan, how you doing? Coach Harvey Hyde, Dan Weber. My name is Dave from Ventura. Just wanted to kind of elaborate. I know you guys are getting bombarded with questions about the Stanford loss, but kind of want to just vent some of the frustrations I feel, and I'm sure a lot of USC fans feel, is what drives me crazy is watching these games is I feel like there's no sense of urgency. There's no shots on the sidelines from the cameras of showing players getting fired up or firing each other up or stressed out or any sense of just willingness to want every game that bad and that deeply. And I think what guys fail to realize is that this is not the NFL where you can lose half your games and still make it to the Super Bowl. Every game counts. Every game's critical. Every game means something, especially when it's conference games and a team like Stanford. So I'm just kind of curious your guys' thoughts, the coach's thoughts on kind of, if you guys are kind of seeing the same things. And I understand they're kids and they're younger and it's supposed to be fun and all that, but this is USC. This is a story program, lots of tradition behind it. And with these type of athletes that we're getting in, five-star, four-star athletes, I just feel like the sense of urgency and the pride sometimes is just lost. And the willingness to want to win that bad kind of goes out the window at times. But anyways, just curious you guys' thoughts. Thanks so much for the awesome podcast and fight on.
Yeah, Dave, I think that's a really good point. It does have more of an NFL feel about it. More of when you go to go to practice, it's kind of got a little bit of that kind of NFL, feel. You look at the sidelines, you're right about the urgency. It didn't seem to be there. It seemed to be, you don't quite see that old college spirit at USC right now. I mean, it just seems like they're not that excited about what they're doing, or they're not showing it all that much. And I think some of that's a lack of confidence and, a feeling of, when you're afraid, for example, as the coach has said, when you get these 10 and 13 play drives and all you're thinking about is who's going to screw it up? How are we going to screw it up? What's going to happen? A 13 play drive is not a good thing because you're bound to screw it up. There's some of that, the idea that you've got fourth and two before halftime in, at the Stanford 40 and you have no idea what play to call. That makes it a little hard to be all fired up, I think. But yeah, you're right. You have more of a sense that that you're watching a junior NFL team where they're going to have to go through the motions. They play 20 games counting the exhibitions, and they can get into the playoffs if they win, one more than half. And that's not the way college football is. In a lot of ways, it's one and out. And you don't see that urgency about, it is one and out. And I don't know where that's coming from, but that's a good observation.
Dan, could you guess that might come from just the messaging of the coaches? I know Helton in his postgame presser said that USC fought like warriors and that it's a learning lesson. Do you think that the lack of urgency stems from that type of mindset?
No question. I mean, it's like, we love you. You're doing great. You guys, you can't, can't do any better than you're doing. I'm proud of you. Everything is, I think there's just a sense of, hey, we got through it and nobody, got hurt badly. And, we tried hard and, we just, weren't as good as they were. And we were on the road. We got a young quarterback, da, 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 da. Yeah. The messaging is, you're doing great. I mean, I guarantee you, if you talk to the offensive line, they will tell you they did pretty well. And there's nothing you can say that will convince them they didn't do pretty well. They're nothing. They'll say, well, we had those long drives. We, you know, all three backs, they had pretty decent games. We only gave up five sacks or whatever it was, you know, four or five. You know, it's just messaging is part of it for sure. Yep.
We have a question from Don who says, does USC have more quote-unquote talent than Stanford? Does Stanford have better quote-unquote football players than USC? Or is the coaching gap so big that it doesn't matter?
Yeah, I think if you go back and look at the last five recruiting classes that and compare them, the basic classes that make up these rosters, that USC's like 3-3, you know, 2-4, and what was, I think, an 8 maybe. And Stanford is like, you know, 20, 23, 40. That, you know, it's not even comparable in terms of the talent that the two schools bring in. And you know, Stanford, that's tough for them. They got to, you know, they do have, you know, academic requirements that are different. And you look at their roster, and they got kids from literally everywhere in the country, and they have to work really hard just to get them there. And then they, you know, have to put them into something that they believe they can do. Last year, they didn't get it right. And last year, USC's talent margin was pretty obvious. And this year, you know, Stanford worked like crazy, and they only do what they can do. But they do it really well. They believe in it. And if you would compare the recruiting rankings of USC's offensive linemen and Stanford, there's no comparison. Stanford's not getting those, you know, top kids anymore from all over the country. And yet, whose offensive line, you know, outperformed the other without any question, you know, with Stanford. So there's an awful lot, you know, to do with the way they're coached and the way they believe in what they're doing and the way they know what they have to do and only do that. They don't try to do things they can't do. I mean, they're not running Costello, a quarterback, on any kind of an option situation, because that's not who he is. It's not what he does. But they protect the heck out of him, and he needs it. You know, he's a kid that can't be speeded up. If you speed him up, the results aren't nearly as good. And USC couldn't speed him up, for example, because of the way, you know, Stanford out-schemed him and then out-executed him. And, you know, so it's mostly what Stanford does with those kids when they get them there and what USC does with their kids when they get them there.
Execution, there's a buzzword we hear a bunch. We'll get to those in some later questions. Here's a JT Daniels voicemail question for you. Dan, here you go.
This message is for Dan. Dan, this is Big Al from Newport Beach. And I respect what you have to say and what you've seen out on the practice field. But what I heard about our quarterback coming out of high school in the first parts of training camp was several things that I would love to get your opinion on. One was his amazing pocket presence. I saw some Jim Everett happy feet out there against Stanford. People have also mentioned that he's got an ability to read his progressions and check down. I saw a lot of staring down his receivers, including one that was led to an interception. There's been a lot of talk about how accurate a passer he is, and I saw several poorly thrown off-target balls, including the one in the end zone that was intercepted. There's been a lot of talk about his tremendous arm strength, and I saw several underthrown long balls, including one that was set to Tyler Bonson, a double move that could have been a touchdown. And then, frankly, we heard a lot about his size, a big kid coming out of high school. And there's a photo of the last couple of weeks, him standing next to Matt Leinart. Maybe he's not as big as the program says. So, Dan, I'm stepped up on the ledge, and I'm about ready to jump off, so I need you to talk me back off the ledge on what you think of these rumors about JT Daniels, and is he just another heavily promoted five-star kid out of the modern-day system that maybe has peaked? Love to get your input, fight on.
Yeah, I think you're probably completely wrong. I think you maybe got every single one of those incorrect. Yeah, he may not have been able to throw it down 50 yards down the field on a day where he badly bruised his hand, had to be taken out of the game, he had to be taken in an x-ray. Probably wasn't able to do anything with that hand Sunday and Monday. So to, you know, say, gosh, he didn't get that one, you know, 50 yards down the field. You know, no, I think I think he's got a terrific arm, an unbelievably good arm. I think to say the ball in the end zone to Amon-Ra was off, it was off maybe, what, 3 inches? Amon-Ra had pretty much as good a chance to catch it as the defensive back who just made a better play on it and made a more decisive play. I thought USC's receivers, he completed the same number of passes as Costello. You take away, I know people say, oh, you can't take, but the last two passes, again, kind of desperation situation. I thought it was a really good performance. If you say he stares down his receivers, if they're coming at you the way Stanford was with pressure, you don't have time to look at receiver number two or receiver number three. And very often, if receiver number two is being held or tackled, you better hope receiver number one is open. So again, I don't think he had a chance to kind of scan the field. I think that's one of his big strengths, is the ability to see the whole field and go from side to side. He can't do it if the pocket's collapsing. And if you talk about happy feet, you better have happy feet if they're collapsing the pocket on you. I mean, you got to do something. You got to, get out of there. How many times did he have a chance to just stand in the pocket and survey his progression and go through them? I don't even remember any where he wasn't under some kind of duress. If he'd have had, for example, even with the bad hand, if he'd have been given the pocket that KJ Costello had gotten, and had he been throwing to the Stanford receivers who, for some reason, when they hit third and long, they were able to complete passes for 22, 23, 25 yards, 16 yards, I think, because Costello hit enough time. So I think that would be unfair. I would say almost all those criticisms are unfair. I mean, actually, to me, JT's a little bigger than I expected him, a little bigger. He's probably, I would call him, I would not call him 6'3", that they do in the book. I'd call him, I call him 6'2", in the way that they describe a guy's 6'2". He's 216 pounds. He's strong. He runs better than I had expected him to. To talk about a kid who's a freshman going on the road against the top 10 team, and not having a whole lot of really solid offense to go with, I thought it's a pretty good performance, especially considering the hand injury. I would say this: JT Daniels is the least problem USC has on offense, the absolute least problem. Okay, fix a lot of other things. JT Daniels, you'll be jumping up and down, screaming, "Way to go, JT!" He is the least problem USC has on offense.
Well, keeping in track with offensive problems, we have a question from Earl in West LA who says, lots of offensive problems, but they all seem to revolve around the O-line play. 2 weeks of inconsistent offensive line performance and more stalled drives than I can count. What is the problem, Dan?
They just don't look like they come off the ball well enough. They don't look like they have the ability. At times they get a little bit of a, run game going, but they don't really stick with it. It looks like maybe they tried too many things, some of which they can't do. And you kind of got to know exactly what you could do and how, if you're going to run the ball and you get third and two, you get a couple of 4 yard gains. Now you're third and two. What do you do? Who do you trust? And I think there's really a trust situation right now with the coaches and in the line. And if you're a running back or you're a quarterback, who do you trust? I mean, and it's not that, everybody's breaking down. They only need one guy to break down. And I think that's a big part of the problem. There's just not that precision, that confidence that everybody is going to execute on every play. And let's face it, you got an offensive line, and we get a report on Thursday before Stanford that basically three of the starters didn't really practice, okay? Two of them did a little, and one of them didn't go at all. And then miraculously, all three of them are in the lineup on the field against Stanford. I'm not sure that if you can't answer the bell for Thursday's practice, I'm not sure you should be answering the bell for Saturday at Stanford. You've got younger guys who really want, you know, look, we've been real pleased with some of the younger guys that they do have backups this year. Clay's talked about what a difference it is to have backups. I think this is the point where you say, look, guys, you're not ready to go on Thursday. We'll get you in if we can on Saturday. But you don't have them out there to answer the starting bell. They didn't practice Thursday. Yep, you're not in there Saturday. That would be my approach. But,
that makes sense, Dan. And, you know, I think they did get the run game going. I don't think the run blocking has been as big of a problem as the pass blocking. When I rewatched the game, and I know Shotgun Keeley, you guys rewatched it again too. I don't know if you got the whole thing because I know it takes Shotgun a long time, but
I made it through the first half. Enough to see O-line problems for sure.
But there was so many times where there were four Stanford rushers. So they'd show like a 5-man front maybe, or 5 men in the box. One guy, linebacker, would drop in the coverage. You know, the 3-down lineman would rush and like a linebacker might twist and go from the outside up the middle. But it worked all the time. And they would get pressure with 4 against 6 or 7. 5 offensive linemen. Usually a running back was in there every time. Sometimes there was 2 running backs or a running back and a tight end. And they were just able to generate pressure that way. So it seemed like, I don't know if it was physical communication or what, but it seemed like that's where it was. It didn't see the same sort of issues when I saw the run blocking, but on the pass blocking, it was very prevalent.
Yeah, and I don't know if you should count the running backs as blockers in passing situations because I don't think they're getting the job done.
They did a pretty good job, though. Carr and Sed did a pretty good job.
I saw them times where they helped, but like,
compared to tight end blocking was subpar.
Yeah.
Oh, well, compared to tight end, okay, right, that's not fair. I just like to see them do better. I mean, it
as a group, they have to do better.
Yes.
There's 7 of them and 4 rushers. You have to do better than that.
When you watch a guy like Bryce Love, a Heisman candidate, who blocks the heck out of it? I mean, he is a terrific pass blocker. And, you know, that's what everybody has to be. It's like, it's not like, well, they do it okay most of the time. No. And I just think you watch and there's not enough bounce in their feet. They don't seem to have the ability to pick up. Clay would say, well, what happened on this play? And Clay would say, well, they ran a great twist. And to fill out that sentence, and we didn't pick it up because they did something we weren't anticipated and we weren't quick enough, athletic enough, to do something about it. Now, these kids were apparently athletic enough to be recruited by USC coming out of high school, but, you know, they get to be juniors and seniors and they're not athletic enough to pick up. And Stanford's not running in a bunch of, NFL draft picks this year on this defense. I mean, it's a nice Stanford team, but it's not a team that the NFL scouts are saying, man, we got to get this guy or that guy. They had a better defensive front last year, and USC did a better job against it. So I think it was mostly USC not having the ability to do what they need to do, not being prepared properly, not being fast enough and athletic enough and react quickly enough and anticipate enough. And it's just, you name it. But Ryan's right. When they just hit the lineup and kind of go at you, Stanford didn't have an advantage in terms of strength or ability to get a push up front. I mean, USC had pretty good push. The problem is you get 4 yards and you get 4 yards and now you're 3rd and 2. What do you run at 3rd and 2? Because Stanford might do something that you're not expecting. And is USC going to be able to get it? You know, the 4th and 2 probably cost them the game where they couldn't get it on 3rd and 2 at the 40 of Stanford before halftime. So then they got to run, they're not going to run. I mean, for example, if you've got 3rd and 2 at the Stanford 40, you should be able to run the ball twice and get 2 yards. They couldn't get any yards on the run. And then the pass, they got nothing on the pass. So you can't do that. When you get that opportunity, they could have tied the game and going into halftime, and they're down 14 to nothing instead.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a really big swing.
Yeah. We have like a whole section on offensive line questions, but we, there's a lot of play. I don't know. Do you want to do another one, or do you want to, I could do a play calling voicemail.
Well, we have a question from Nick in Cyprus who says, why does the O-line seem to be worse off with Callaway than we played musical chairs at that position, coach? Meaning,
you know what? Yeah,
it's been three years with Neil Callaway. Yeah, where the previous six had a different one every year.
I think it's easy to personalize it. I think it would be hard for the best offensive line coach in the country to get enough done if you have a team that doesn't practice fast and hard against defensive people who are really trying to stop you. If you don't go in pads at least twice a week, I just think, you know, there's just not enough done in practice. I think the offensive linemen, more than anybody, don't benefit when they don't go hard. And now that they're going against scout team almost completely, you know, in practice when they do 11-on-11, I think the offensive linemen, and for me, I think the wide receivers are having trouble as a result of not being challenged in practice and not having to go full speed and fully competitive in practice. I think it shows up in those two position groups more than anybody, because you need to be challenged in practice and you need to be ready to go at those. I mean, that was the amazing thing about, you know, the Pete Carroll era. There wasn't a player who didn't tell you practice was harder than the games, and they knew it. They were confident going into games. They didn't have a sense of, well, can we do this or can't we? They knew they could because of how they practiced. And this team, I think, he doesn't know what they can do or can they get the play when they fourth and two comes, because they haven't done it in practice. They haven't been challenged in practice. And this defense would be the kind of defense that could really challenge them. And if they don't, if they're not getting it done, they'll show them up. And that, you know, happened, we thought, really well the mock game week. When they turned the defense loose and the offense slugged it out, and for Tuesday and Wednesday, they had just great practices, and we haven't seen that again. And we've seen more and more scout team and more letting the offense just run their stuff instead of being, you know, again, challenged. And I don't think you need to tackle full, you know, you don't need a full tackle at all. You have to need to take people to the ground. But you need to play full speed, and you need to fully compete in practice for the angles and you know, knock the ball down if you get the chance, and don't let them catch it, and don't let the receivers, you know, out, and do all the things that they're going to face in games. And I don't think they're seeing that. So they get to games, and they're not quite ready to play at the level that they have to play in games now. That doesn't always hurt them when they're severely out-talenting someone else. But when they play at Stanford, so they're out-talenting them, but not by that much. And when you add the way Stanford executes, that makes it really difficult, I think, for them to run an offense that looks like they can do what they want to do or they believe in it. And I was just thinking, if you're the play caller, if you're T. Martin, and you've got that fourth and two call, what the heck do you call? I mean, do you know what to call? I mean, we all watch the games, and what would we call? We all watch practice. What would be your go-to play there? Or you got third and two, and you got two plays to get 2 yards, and you failed on both of them.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. That's absolutely unacceptable, and it's a sign that you're not getting it done in practice. You have to get – you got 2 yards to go at the 40 – for the tying touchdown for halftime, and you're going to get the ball to start the second half. It's just a perfect scenario, but you have to do it. You have to get those 2 yards. If you haven't done it in practice, you're not going to do it in the game against Stanford.
Yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned the play calling. There's a lot of offensive line questions. There's a lot of play calling questions. Here's one, a voicemail for you.
Hi, Ryan and team. This is Alan in St. Louis. It's been a while since I last called, so I hope everyone's doing well. I'm sure you've already gotten a lot of calls already about the lack of ingenuity on the offense and the repetitiveness that we've seen over the past few years that was exemplified by the performance today. So I'm going to avoid commenting on that. The only thing I'll say is that we got to a point in the game where I swear my cat that was sitting next to me on the couch was able to call plays based off the formation at the line of scrimmage. It was that easy to see what was going on. But anyway, the point I wanted to make, and I was hopefully looking forward to Dan Weber's comments on this, was that I want to know what you guys thought about Stanford. I wasn't particularly impressed by this team. I felt like Costello didn't make any throws that were particularly hard, only found receivers that were open. And both the offense and defense seemed like, if it weren't for the competitive advantage of knowing exactly every single play that USC was calling on offense or defense, I don't really know if I would have been that afraid of the Stanford team. So just want to know your thoughts on the performance of the opposition this week. And as always, thank you so much for all the work that you do, and fight on.
Yeah, I mean, I think your evaluation of Stanford is right on. I mean, if you can only score 17 points in a big game that matters so much at home that you've been pointing for, you know, for a year, you're probably not great. But they didn't make Costello. And I know if Bruce Feldman comes on, I know he says, you know, likes Costello. But the genius of what Stanford did with Costello, they only make him do what he does well. And USC didn't make him speed up. They didn't get him off his spots. He's not very accurate if you get him moving and get him off, you know, exactly the rhythm of the play. And, you know, he still, they were only 4 of 13 on third downs. They only had 13 first downs. They only ran 57 plays. And they gained 342 yards. None of those are really winning numbers in almost any game that you could think of, that would be enough to win the football game for you. It sure shouldn't have been enough to win that game, you know, for Stanford. But then USC basically, you know, didn't show up on offense. So I think Stanford did whatever Stanford does in order to, you know, get the most out of what they got. And Bryce Love just keeps trying. I mean, he had an awful lot of plays where he didn't gain anything and didn't gain anything and didn't gain anything. They didn't look very good. And then he'd break one. And they'd go through the cycle again. And, you know, as good as the USC defense played overall, they still are giving up those, you know, explosive plays. And it cost them. You know, they would have been able to not give up, you know, the 59-yard run, the 28-yard run, to Bryce Love and the untouched touchdown run, they have a great day, or not give up those 26 and 29 yard pass, you know, patterns of those big receivers. But Stanford knows what they do well, and that's what they do. And USC, you don't get the sense that they absolutely know who they are or what they do well, or, I mean, just the idea that Stanford decided, and smartly so, even though he technically isn't a starter, they decided to take Amon-Ra out of the game. And they did. And USC couldn't really figure out how to get Amon-Ra into the passing game. I mean, you know, the one great play that he makes on the ball right out of the end zone, and then the one play in the other end zone where he doesn't quite get to it. But he needed more chances to be a factor in that game. And USC needed to be able to figure out how to do that, and they couldn't, and they didn't. And they looked like they were just, you know, kind of desperation. And then at the end, you know, with 5 minutes to go, it doesn't look like they're desperation at all. They're just kind of trotting up the line of scrimmage and running that, you know, end-of-the-game offense that we used to get go crazy when Cody Kessler was doing it. And they were trailing somebody, and you were screaming, "What's going on? You know, you need a couple of scores." But wasn't a good day for the offense, and they need to figure out a lot of things before they move on down the road. Because they're good enough to beat. There's not a team on their schedule they're not good enough to beat, but they got to show up and play.
So John in Brea is hoping to use our podcast to keep him sane this week. He says, I'm angry not at the players, the coaches, or administration. I'm angry at myself for thinking this year was going to be different. Hearing Clay Helton after the game say this is an early game against a top 10 team makes me think that he doesn't think that he doesn't have the expectation that USC is a top 10 team. I would like to have him hear him use the word unacceptable or something similar. Were you at all disappointed in Clay Helton's comments after the game? Does this team and coaching staff and administration have the drive and mentality necessary to ever be a top 10 team again?
They haven't shown it. I mean, that's the problem. They really don't show it. I mean, they just, you know, just going and trying isn't good enough. You got to be better than that if you're USC football. I mean, and basically the history of USC football is you have two different kinds of coaches. You have the four who won national championships, and then you have all the rest. And you either, it's boom or bust at USC. You either are really good. If you're really good, USC is a place where you can win national championships. If you're not really good, you're gone. I mean, there's no like happy in between, and whether this group is going to be that sort of in between. But until they get that national championship mentality, you know, what you saw Saturday is probably going to be what you're going to see, where, you know, they'll beat the teams that they've got more talent mostly. They won't beat the really well coached teams on the road, and maybe be good enough to win the Pac-12 South, should be most of the time. But will they be good enough to challenge for national championships? Not the way they're going now. They just don't seem to take themselves seriously enough. And they don't seem to have as much confidence in themselves as you would think a USC football team with the number of top recruits and all that they have should take themselves seriously. I noticed today, Tom Herman, or yesterday, I guess, Tom Herman's press conference at Texas, and he echoed the words of David Shaw last week, which was how much talent USC has, how talented they are. You never hear a coach say how tough USC is, how physical they are, how well coached they are. Never hear that, ever, not once. And I think, who was it? I guess it was Herman also said, and they're really fast on defense. And you think, well, you know, USC has fast athletes on offense too. But the more you think about it, if you're watching USC, they don't look fast because they don't play fast. And that very much could be a symptom of how they practice. If you don't practice fast, you don't look like you're playing fast. And on offense, they don't really look all that fast. And I don't know that, you know, somebody, you know, I just thought about this, that you practice the way you play and you play the way you practice. And that's exactly what USC does. They play the way they practice.
We have another voicemail question for you, Dan. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan and Dan, this is a deplorable Dan in Tustin. Calling in to just let you know that everything looks good to me. It's like Clay and T have got everything pretty much covered, except for things like offensive line blocking, defensive line stopping the run. It's just another year of the same old, same old. One of these days we're going to figure out that this head coach and this offensive coordinator have taken us as far as we're going to go. We got to do something different. This isn't USC football, not even close.
Yeah, I think, for deplorable Dan there, I think a USC team that can't line up and block you, can't knock you off the ball, is not USC football. I mean, you go back through the history, and I'll be honest, in watching USC football from afar in the Midwest, or the the northern end of the South in Kentucky, the thing I always noticed were the big athletic offensive linemen. As much as the tailbacks were winning Heisman trophies, or as much as eventually you had great quarterbacks come along, and I just think the thing that always impressed me about USC football was that he had really big, lean, athletic, tough offensive linemen who you knew were going to be great in the NFL for years and years and years and years. That, to me, was USC football. They had offensive linemen that when they played people in the Rose Bowl, the Big Ten teams that we followed didn't look like the USC teams. USC had better-looking athletes, and we don't see that as much now. That just, you don't have that sense that USC comes out and lines up, that they're just going to knock your block off. That's not a sense that you get. And they've got to restore that. They've got to do it in recruiting. They got to do it in practice. And then they got to do it the way they scheme. And then they got to do it so that they believe in it and their players believe in it. I mean, those teams, you know, that John McKay had, they believed in a student body right. They absolutely believed in whatever it was they were doing. And I'm not sure this team, these coaches, believe in what they're doing. I think they're hoping. I mean, one of the astonishing things we heard on the conference call Sunday night was how they're hoping to get better field position, because when you get the average starting position on the field is the 22-yard line, it makes you have all those long drives, and you just know you're going to screw them up. And you think, what in the world? I mean, you have no control to some extent over where you get the football. And if that gives you a chance to have long drives, so be it. Their offense is sitting on the bench, and you're pounding on their defense. You want long drives, you would think, unless you're thinking, oh, we're going to screw this up somehow. And if you want better field position, here's another tip. If they have a punter who's kicking at 66 yards and 61 yards, and your punter is kicking at 30 yards, you got a problem. You're not going to get good field position. They're going to get good field position. If you want good field position, maybe you need to get a punter that kicks it more than 30 yards at times. I mean, you know, it's just, you're not flipping the field. When they had a chance to flip the field and you hit a 30-yarder, I mean, don't talk about field position. Yeah. You're not getting it.
Insert USC has two punters on scholarship already joke here.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, and then you watch the Stanford kid. Okay, I know it was a career long 66, but then he hits one 61 yards. I mean, it's like, what the heck? It's like they're playing two different, it's like they're shooting a howitzer and you're shooting a, you know, you got a pea shooter or something. I mean, it's just, it was so unfair to the 66 yards to 30 yards. I mean, it's just, you can't, there's no excuse for that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Brian sent us a question that says, with seeing the dramatic change at Texas A&M in just one season with the coaching / culture change, is that what is needed at USC? I like Helton, but I feel like he isn't demanding the level of excellence and accountability that is needed. Just look at the offensive line. They have been consistently horrendous for the past two seasons. Is Helton the guy who will demand change and will right the ship? Please give me your thoughts.
Well, that's the question that, you know, everybody's asking, the $64,000 question or whatever you want to call it. It's the question Clay has to answer. He's got to answer. I'm not sure coming out, you know, Sunday and saying we're going to do the same thing in practice. We're going to, you know, do it the same way Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that we've been doing it. I just think that doesn't get it done. Saying Thursday is situational mastery day. I kind of liked it when it was like turnover Tuesday or whatever. You know, if you want to get good field position and that really matters, maybe you need to work harder on creating turnovers and takeaways. There was a team here that, you know, we all can remember who really worked hard at that, and they got a lot of short fields. I don't know that it's good enough to just hope things, you know, to say things like, with our receivers Saturday, the ball just didn't find them. It just happened. No, the ball didn't find them. Come on. You can't say that. You can't think that. And you've got to be in control of your own destiny. And you have to make the ball find them. You have to make them find the ball. It's and you can't say, wow, we're in trouble if we don't get good short fields. No, if you get long fields, you get to have longer drives. You just make it happen. And I that inability to see this as a game where it's up to you to make good things happen for yourself. You're in charge of that. And, yeah, I thought Texas A&M, there's a new, kind of a new spirit there. And I wasn't even a big, you know, Jimbo fan, but, something changed. No question.
Tarik wants
and
to...
now the Pac-12 has the ex Texas A&M coach, and how's he doing?
Yeah.
Sorry to get you out there, Dan.
That's okay.
Tarik wants to know, USC struggled against Stanford's large tight ends. Does this concern you going into Texas against their large receivers?
It concerns me if they can't get any pressure on the quarterbacks. If they can't, you know, I mean, they were taking pride. Let's face it, this is a team that 46 sacks last year, tied for the most in the country. And they, you know, they basically, you know, didn't rush Costello at all. I mean, USC, okay, the problem to some extent is they lost their third safety. But USC, he had a pretty good matchup. I mean, who else in the country? USC started 6'4 and 6'3 safeties. Nobody else in the country, I think, has two safeties that big. They've got a big, you know, a big corner in Iman. So they've got three as big, you know, guys in the secondary as anybody in the country, and bigger than a lot of NFL teams. So, you know, if teams have, you know, player tight ends, A, you want to take advantage of them in terms of they probably aren't going to be the greatest blockers in the world, and B, they're not going to have the greatest, you know, downfield speed. So, you know, there are ways you can use that to your advantage, and you can't say, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? They're so tall. No, there are things that, you know, that you can do, to counteract that, but you got to do it. You got to get to the quarterback. I thought their pass rush was just, uninspired and just, you know, I mean, poor Quarter Gustin tried this and tried that and tried whatever, and Stanford just picked him up wherever he went. Stanford picked him up. USC didn't, as much as we talked about not enough urgency on offense at the end of the game, I thought they were playing it safe, and you can't second guess too much a defense that gave them 17 points. I mean, that's a winning defense.
That was enough to win the game. That was enough of an effort to win the game.
Yeah. So as much as you say, I wish they had a pass rush, or I wish they wouldn't have given up those long, you know, third and long plays, or wish they wouldn't have, you know, let Bryce, you know, Love get away a couple of times. He still played well enough to win that game. So I guess we don't want to focus on that. But yeah, there ought to be things you can do to take advantage of big tight ends. I mean, you know, it's not that easy for them. You know, big tight end who's a pass receiver is probably not going to be a great blocker and probably not going to get downfield all that well. You just have to play fit. Faster on defense, and they're playing on offense. Didn't happen enough Saturday.
So finally, from Alex, he wants to know from all of us, after Saturday's loss, what does a successful season look like for Clay and his staff? What improvements would we like to see going forward?
Well, I mean, I still think they better win the South. If they don't win the South, I think that's the floor of you know what the ceiling is.
That's the minimum of success, I would say, is winning the South.
Yeah, they got to win the South, and if they don't win the South, you know, all bets are off. I think, I mean, who do they play from now on? Who they can't beat? I mean, is there anybody they can't beat if they go out and, you know, reasonably execute and reasonably scheme, you know, get the game plan right and reasonably, you know, protect and just play with enough, you know, fire and enough, you know, excitement and enough, you know, full speed execution. But again, you can go broke betting on coaches are going to see the light. I mean, you know, if you followed the Kiffin, you know, the end of the Pete Carroll era and then the Kiffin years and then the Sark years, you go broke betting that they're going to figure it out. Or when it happens, they're going to know it. You know, the second, you know, when Kiffin was 2011, when he finished the way he did and they ran the ball and they blocked people and they just, you know, did and they come back ranked number one and the next year, you think he did learn from that, didn't he? He absolutely learned seeing what USC could do when they could run the ball and be, you know, really sound. And but he didn't have Red Ellison. He didn't have, you know, Khalil. And they did 90 different things the next year, and they were awful. You know, they went from, what is it, the first to worst. And so the more I think you say, well, I think they're going to get it now, or just like us, you know, we loved their practices 3 weeks ago. They got it. They're competing. They're physical. They're going fast. They're challenging one another. The offense has to perform because the defense isn't going to let them if they don't. And that went away. It just, boom, that was mock game week. And then, you know, that just vanished. We started getting ready for the season, and they started preparing game for game, you know, game by game, and it all disappeared into the ether. And so who knows? I mean, you would wish that they would go back to what they did in mock game week, but I haven't seen any signs of that. And the more they do kind of dummy walkthroughs against the scout team, not sure that gets you ready. I don't think Texas is doing dummy mock. I mean, it was interesting. Texas was coming off the practice field Sunday. So they go right from Saturday's game into Sunday's practice. Monday, Herman, I guess, had about a half-hour press conference. And he's not, you know, he's not getting, you know, softballs either. But Texas is working. Whether they're good enough, whether they believe in what they're doing, I don't know. But USC's got to be pretty purposeful. And I know everybody said, well, what did the USC do Monday? Well, they rearranged their practice schedule so they could watch Sam Darnold. Well, that's great. I mean, hopefully Sam inspires them. Sam ought to be an inspiration when you watch you watch what he's doing now. But did that get him ready for Texas? I don't know.
Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist. I know you got to get run off to practice, so we'll be there. We'll practice? Be trailing behind. Yeah.
Practice?
There's practice, actually. I don't think it was rearranged today because no Sam Darnold game. But Dan, thanks so much. And, you know, again, apologize. We couldn't get to all the questions because there were – I mean, how many are left, Keeley? There's like zillions.
Oh, really? We just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
So we apologize.
We'll try to answer it. We'll try to answer them. Send them. We'll send them. I'll get them and we'll see what we can do here.
All right. Well, that was Dan Weber. Great stuff from Dan. Again, apologize. We couldn't get to all of the questions. We'll have Dan do his column. Maybe he'll, on his flight down to Austin, maybe he can answer some of those. But we have, you know, Keeley was in studio with me. We also have Bruce Feldman in studio. You can follow him on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB. He's a contributor at The Athletic. Yeah, it was like minor contributor, right? but you know, major guy there. And then of course he's does games on Fox. He was the sideline reporter for Fox with Brady Quinn and who's the other guy? Joe Davis.
Are you not a Dodgers fan? Do you not watch Joe?
No, I don't. I don't have a Spectrum. Whatever. Right, I do like Brady. I like Brady. I think he's pretty good.
Joe's very good.
He's very good? All right.
Yeah, Joe's really good.
Well, Bruce, thanks for coming in studio with us.
Good to be here, Ryan. Thank you guys for having me. I'm glad Dan warmed up the seat, so I'm ready to go.
A little different experience now, Keeley, right? We're not going to do questions. We're just going to like chat.
Just about a little chit chat about Stanford.
A little chit chat, yeah. And I know you're a big fan of Trader Joe's too. I wanted to let our listeners know we're all big Trader Joe's fans here. I just finished. I got to get more of the peanut butter cups because I just finished my last one.
Have you guys ever tried the little ice cream cones from there?
I don't think I've tried those.
You really got to go. I'm not. This is like they sponsor our podcast too. It would have nothing to do with this. Honest to God, we were down in Florida at my sister's house, and they had them for their kids, and like it's the best
like ice cream. Like
they're little. I think it's like straight to the cone. They're like not much bigger than your thumb, so they're low calorie. They're vanilla and chocolate. Definitely get them.
All right. Wow. I love getting recommendations, so I will try.
I know you have sweets. A sweet tooth, Ryan. So
yes, I do. And Bruce actually brought me lunch, our little favorite pokey place around the corner. Thank you for doing
go
that,
get
Bruce.
The ice cream cone. Seriously, it's like the best dessert you're now. Going to get.
I'm going to stop on the way to practice.
And you could probably eat three of them.
Okay, I'll pick some up and drop them off at your house. It's your complex. well, we got Bruce here, and we wanted to get him on. We wanted to get him on for the live show, and he wasn't feeling that good. He's traveling a lot on the weekends and stuff. So he said he volunteered to come in, you know, for the podcast, brought me lunch. I really felt bad
because I was like, that definitely seemed like I was hungover or something. It wasn't the case. We took our kids to the movie theater for the first time. Wow. Didn't feel well, got like kind of sick in there, went to take a nap, and then woke up with like 11 minutes before you were like, my show is starting. I'm like, I'm never going to make this. So here I am.
Nice. Well, thanks for coming, Bruce. Well, what did you see, you know, being on the sidelines, seeing everything that was going on? What were kind of some of the impressions you got from the game?
A couple of things stood out. First of all, I thought that their O-line was really underwhelming because looking at Stanford's defense, and I spent, you know, 3 days around the Stanford program last week, they have a very good secondary. They're really talented, especially at the corners. Their linebackers are pretty good, but the big concern with them was their defensive line.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, they had probably the best player in the Pac-12 in Solomon Thomas. And then last year, they had a dominant defensive lineman, Harrison Phillips. Both those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And for USC to struggle and for them, I think they had 37 carries, nothing longer than 14 yards. And USC has really good running backs. Is anyone as good as Ronald Jones? Probably not as explosive, but they still have some of the best running backs in the Pac-12. Yeah. Like, I think if you were to rank the 15 best running backs in the Pac-12, USC probably has three of them, or at least two of them. And for them not to get anything going, Toa Lobendon was back. Now, was he 100%? I don't know. But he played, and he's played a lot. Again, it wasn't a great Stanford defense that JT Daniels didn't have much of a chance, and the receivers didn't get open. The other thing that kind of as an aside was just I'm on the sideline of a lot of games, and up till the third quarter, first of all, USC had no big plays in the first half, but they hit one like midway through the third quarter, and that was the only sign of life I really felt like I saw from USC there. And I think some of that's a function of Stanford's game environment. Stanford's not in school yet. They won't start classes, I guess, for another 2 weeks. And there was a big chunk of USC fans there that made up the stadium, and they didn't have much to cheer for. So it was kind of Stanford plays at a plodding pace. You know, they're not pushing the tempo. Our crew does a lot of Big 12 games, and where they're going faster, and there's a more of a sense of urgency, and it's a little more frenetic. You didn't have that in that stadium. So it was kind of almost like they were lulled to sleep, and they look like it.
A lot of times you see those Jeeps or whatever they are that have like the tower on them, they're going up and down the sidelines. And if it's like a Big 12 game, I'm sure they're like driving up and down, running over people and stuff. You didn't have to move all that much probably for this one.
No, it was really kind of a listless performance. You know, I thought Stanford's good on offense. They didn't need to be great. They were going to win this game and they were going to limit possessions. And it was just like, it was a Stanford game. And this is the question I would ask you guys, because you're around these guys all the time. Stanford has an identity. They know what they're about. I don't get the feeling USC really has an identity right now. And I think that's a concern. I mean, I wrote about this week that I think, you know, and full disclosure, I interviewed Ryan for this piece because I thought Ryan has as good a feel for the USC fan base as anybody. But, you know, what's Clay Helton's fate? Most of the best players in the program are freshmen and sophomores. There are going to be some growing pains. I think it's going to be hard for them not to be a 9 or 10 win team next year, just because you look at the guys who are coming back. They're going to have a really good D line with those freshmen and sophomores. The coaching staff raves about your kid from Bishop Gorman, who EA, I don't know how they pronounce his last, Nateote or
Pele EA Nateote.
Nateote.
Very good.
I've practiced.
Yeah. The next great USC linebacker. I mean, there's guys there. So I think they'll be really good. It's just, you know, they got to get better on the offensive line if they want to compete for national championships.
Yeah.
Did you see the similar stuff on the sideline, Keely? You were down there?
Or? Yeah. I mean, there was no sense of urgency. I mean, USC was never out of the game. But if you just took the feel of the sideline, it seemed like it was 50-0. It just seemed like, oh, this is impossible. We can't do it. And that's not something you want from UFC, who's clearly more talented and could do it. I just felt like they didn't think they could do it before the game was even over.
And I think, you know, Bruce, the point of identity, I think Clay Helton said before, like, they want to be like Stanford and stuff. And, you know, last year, to Clay Helton's credit, he beat him twice. Like, those were the best two wins I think he had on the schedule. And he didn't think it was going to sit well with David Shaw. I don't know if he's like preaching revenge or anything, but that's not something he really wanted on his resume, losing to Clay Helton three times in a row. But they have their identity. And once the kind of game starts going the Stanford direction, USC wasn't able to out Stanford, but it seemed like that's what USC was trying to do, but they just weren't executing anywhere near that level.
They even told us that. I forgot who said it in our meeting. I don't know if it was Clay on Friday night said that that's what they were, you know, thinking of trying to do. And once you get in a direction with them, it's interesting because I don't want to say they're mirrors of each other, but at the end of the game, I asked David Shaw a question, and it was really related to his defense. They lost four players on the defense side of the ball who are now in the NFL, one of them Harrison Phillips. To me, that was by far their biggest question, not just the D-line, but the defense, because I think their offense is very good. And so, you know, with it framed that way, he started out the response with all due respect. And when somebody says with all due respect, you're like, oh boy, I don't know where this is going. But it could be right between the eyes. And he said, everybody talks about USC's athletes, and we got really good athletes too. And if you're around them, you see that. I mean, there are guys they have. The most talented defensive back in that game is number 11. He's a freshman, redshirt freshman at Stanford. He's not anybody at USC. I mean, he's a long, like track kind of guy who's 6'1". He's a better athlete than Biggie Marshall. And they have guys, obviously Bryce Love is more dynamic than anybody USC has. I don't think they have some of the smaller fast receivers as much as USC does, but they got big talented receivers. Their tight ends are much better than what USC has right now. I know USC is depleted. They were down to two for that game, but Caden Smith might be a first round pick. The other guy behind him, he could end up as a first round pick. You look at what Walker Little was, I think he was the number one ranked offensive line recruit in the country, and he's living up to that. The kid who got hurt, Foster Sorrell, who was a Washington kid, a lot of people really liked too. The question I guess I would have is, I hate to bring this name up because it was like, I remember Martin Coleman was like a five-star guy. Yeah. Like USC's had a lot of guys in the trenches who have come in as five-star guys or something close to that. And they just don't seem to turn out that way. And I don't know what that is. Whereas you look at some of these other programs and those guys have either, and maybe it's a function of they get to USC and they are, you know, because the USC is recruiting them, their stock goes up. I don't know exactly what goes into it, but you just see more guys living up to it at Stanford than they seem to be at USC right now.
I think there's a lot of, if you look at the recruiting rankings, Stanford's pretty consistent about getting four and five star highly ranked offensive linemen. They'll pick and choose. They don't get the big classes. They're never going to be ranked as high. But the depth that they get on the offensive line is crazy. Like guys at USC wants, and you know, they'll go after them and get them. But if you look at like the skill guys, you know, USC gets far more of those. But it's player development. It's, you know, working in a great system. I think, you know, Stanford didn't really need to do much in the second half. USC didn't. I thought USC played pretty well on defense. They didn't have to. They couldn't get a sack. They couldn't get a turnover. But if Stanford's not planning to do anything crazy, they're not going to put themselves in a place.
Why would they?
There's no reason to do that.
I know. I hope I'm not preempting Dan because I don't know if he's already on in this part of the podcast.
This is following.
So. Like Stanford didn't need to do anything crazy to put up. Like, I don't care how many yards they had. They didn't need to get, you know, it wasn't like they were trying to hit the over for this game. You know, like they had no turnovers. They hit some shots. I think they liked the matchup they had whenever they had somebody on Greg Johnson, you know, going into this in the second quarter. They got some into a, you know, at one point there was a touchdown pass where they had the tight end on him, and it's a 6'7" tight end against, I don't know, Greg Johnson's 5'10 and a half, something like that.
Yeah, it might be.
Being generous, maybe.
Yeah.
And like, I'm, I don't know, 15 feet away from David Shaw. It's late in the second quarter and he's screaming out, KJ, no kill, no kill. Meaning basically that's your matchup. Don't even go away from this. This is too easy. And it was an easy touchdown for them. Yeah. Or, you know, they made it look easy. And I think USC just could not get them out of their comfort zone. And I agree with you. I don't think the defense played bad, But I just think that Stanford pretty much kind of did what they wanted to do and did what they knew they were going to do. It was a Stanford game throughout, and USC couldn't unsettle that.
So you see a lot of teams, especially from the sideline. What stands out to you about USC that is different, maybe in a negative way, about USC?
This is probably unfair because it's only a small window, and you and Shotgun would have a way better sense of this because you guys see them, you know, from field level all the time. But I was just like, wow, they were kind of very listless in the body language and everything like that. And again, some of this is like, it's probably unfair to throw all this out because you have a true freshman quarterback playing in his first conference game, first road game. You had some other guys who are like that. My guess is Amon Ra will not be that way by the end of the year. He might not even be that way by the end of the month. But for now, it was just kind of, we're not really sure. You know, you look and go, who's the leaders? I had asked one of the guys on staff about next year's team because I was like, okay, they got three really promising young defensive linemen. I, again, go back to EA and what they think of him. So who's going to be the leader of the defense? Because you kind of know Cam Smith is kind of their glue guy. And they said, you know, I was told it was probably Jordan Iosefa. And I don't know where it fits on offense. But when you have Sam Darnold covered up a lot of flaws. I think he covered up a lot of flaws from the offensive line. I think to some degree he probably could bail them out on the defensive side of the ball too with some of the just he's going to find a way. And I don't know where there's, it seems to be a little bit of a leadership vacuum right now, I think, in the locker room. I don't know who's that guy, where those guys are, but that's the thing that I think is just kind of they miss right now is just that piece of it. Whereas you look at other programs and when you're on the field, you can see who the leaders are. You can see how they respond. You see it like a different sense of energy when they manage the sidelines. In some ways, I think USC is definitely talented. I don't think they're like, it's not like talented like when Pete Carroll was here, though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, just being around for a long time, I've seen a lot of guys there. There's no Leonard Williams or Cedric Ellis on this team. I mean, there's no Brian Cushing right now. Like, I think Cam Smith is a good player. They have good players, but there's nobody like Marvell Tell, I think, is a good player, but just there's something that's not quite there right now. And I think it's just kind of, they're in a lull.
Yeah, it seems like it. We'll see. The interesting side note I'm seeing on Twitter as we're talking that Bryce Love is not going to play against UC Davis. He actually walked off when I was down there. I think I said hi to you.
Yeah.
Right before you were doing some shot or something. I'm trying to distract you. But then but we saw Bryce Love like walking out before the game was over.
So. He had taken a hit with about 1:30 left in the game because we were supposed to do our post game interview with him, with Shaw and then him. And he went into the injury tent. He got out. He had a big smile on his face. He jogged over. His family or somebody, I think was his family, was there. And then he, you know, as the game was over, so he ran down the tunnel. And it was just in my own like personal thought process of how, you know, because at that point you're trying to think of your questions for people. I was like, well, am I going to ask David Shaw about something that he has clearly, you know, it's not like he needs urgency to find out in this minute what's going on with Bryce Love. I mean, they're going to wait till probably they're back in the locker room. But I don't know what would have happened if they had a Pac-12 opponent this week instead of UC Davis. I think they're bringing their starting center back who missed the first couple of games to get some timing down. I think there was a couple other players who won't play this week. So, I mean, I think that's a function of you played a big game and now they're going to get ready for the rest of the Pac-12 schedule.
Did you see what his injury was? Just curious.
I don't know. I know some people speculated that it might have been concussion. When we talked to Stanford, they did not say anything about that. It was undisclosed right now. So, it's a tricky thing. Whenever people speculate on, especially on Twitter, like, oh, that's definitely a concussion. Like I did a game a couple of years ago. It was K-State at Oklahoma State. And I would have bet that the quarterback got knocked out of the game with a concussion by everything. And he came later back in the game. We talked to their staff and they said, no, he went through concussion protocol. And like that to me, like the way his body reacted when he was knocked down, like that guy is a K-State quarterback. I would have been convinced that that was a concussion. And again, they said the staff said it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I try to steer clear and whatever the medical staff tells you, they're the ones doing the tests. We're not in the medical tent at that point.
I wanted to ask you about the Texas game. Did you have anything else, Keeley, before we...
I guess for you, seeing USC, what do you expect from this team going forward?
I think JT is going to get a lot better just with more time in there. I think they're probably, I hate to say it like this, but I think they're kind of what I was expecting. I think they look like an 8-4 team. They're in a weak division, right? I don't know what's going to happen when Notre Dame comes to play them.
Herm is tough now. So Arizona State, they're real.
They should still beat everybody. The only team I could think who could give them a hard time is Utah.
Yeah.
Because Utah is physical. And in a lot of ways, they do. I don't think they have as many athletes as USC, but in some regards, they have some things that USC doesn't have. I mean, they get physical. They're nasty on both lines. I don't think they have quite the depth, but when I look at them, I think this is an 8-4 team. I think Notre Dame is more talented than them. I don't know how USC's offensive line will hold up, because if USC had its hands full with Stanford, I know this is going to be a home game when they play Notre Dame. Notre Dame's defense is much more talented than Stanford's, especially in the front seven. Yeah. So there's a long time between now and then. And maybe Tua Lobendon was at 75%. I don't know. And maybe that'll be a big difference. But yeah. They just, like, Chuma Doga had, like, it was something, a hip problem or something. He did not look great. Yeah. That's the question. Again, I just keep coming back to, and I know Dan and you guys talked about it, the O-line is just not good enough. Isn't.
Yeah.
And it should be. That's the problem. It's like everything's in place. There's bodies, there's talent, there's experience, there's continuity, there's everything that you would want. And if they don't perform well, then there's something major that needs to be changed. I wanted to, last thing, we'll let you go, the USC Texas game going down there. Did you have Texas week one?
Also? I did. We had them at Maryland.
So you got to see both these teams.
I did. Yeah. And you have two teams with really young quarterbacks. Ellinger, who played really good at USC last year. He did not play well in week one. He is a very emotional. I don't think he's very similar to JT Daniels. He's a very emotional guy who will run. He's not that accurate, but they kind of feed off his energy. One similar thing is both these teams look better than they play sometimes. Texas has really big athletic receivers, bigger than what USC has. Colin Johnson, if you look at him, you're like, he's a wow guy. He's 6'6", 220. He's a kid from the Bay Area. And he can be great, but sometimes he doesn't look like he's wants to be great, and that's the question. I don't think I think USC may have three better running backs than what Texas has right now. Texas's offensive line isn't great. It may be may play a little better than USC's. I don't think there's great players on. Texas may have a couple of guys who I think would definitely start at USC. They have a cornerback, 13, who's a really, really good player. And then they have a couple of guys on the D-line, but they're kind of similar. They have a big cornerback who was hyped, who's come on after a shaky start, which sounds like a lot like Amon Marshall. They have a real effort guy with long hair who pressures the quarterback, and that's Brecken Hager compared to Porter Gustin. Gary Johnson runs a lot better than Cam Smith, no matter how much weight Cam Smith's lost, but there's some similarities there. I don't know if there's a guy who maybe the Texas cornerback's a first round pick, but there's a lot of similarities there in beyond the quarterbacks are a little different. It's just, this is a home game for them.
Yeah.
They have not looked good the first 2 weeks. There's a lot of pressure on Tarm Herman because the week after our crew has Texas hosting TCU. Now TCU is going to play Ohio State. That's obviously going to be a big challenge for them. But if Texas loses this game, they're kind of staring at a 1-3, and they haven't even seen Oklahoma yet.
Wow.
So you want to, for as much as people here feel like this is a must win for Clay Helton, you have a guy who's in his second year, but there's already a lot of heat on Tom Herman.
Yeah. It's going to be crazy. No, I don't think any sacks for the Texas front four as of now. So maybe, I don't know, it's not the immovable object versus the impenetrable force quite thing going on. But I don't know, maybe the USC offensive line will have a better chance in this one.
Yeah, they had a funky kind of opening because of what all the jet sweep and all the horizontal stuff that Maryland does. So they were kind of on their heels for that. They did not respond great to it. I didn't see how they played against Tulsa, but when you look at them, you'll say, okay, they got guys up front who look like USC would have recruited them.
Okay.
But who knows? I mean, again, this is a team that is kind of underachieved so far too.
Bruce Feldman, follow him on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB123. What is it?
Oh, come on. I'm losing followers when you do that, Ryan. Bruce Feldman CFB.
Yeah, CFB. Because it used to be, he used to have four letters in his Twitter handle. Then there was the Free Bruce hashtag.
Were you the Free Bruce originator? We've never found out for sure.
I don't know. I was one of them.
You were in there. I tried to trace it back like years later. I was curious, and I thought it might have been Lisa Horn.
She might have been part of it too. Yeah, there was a lot.
It was weird, like kind of USC people though, kind of like between you and Lisa
Horn. They had your back.
I definitely appreciate that.
That was a crazy kind of thing. And you know, and I've done my second podcast today and I haven't mentioned, I mean, one of those days you're never going to forget in your life is September 11th. I mean, it's today. Like I feel like a terrible person that I haven't even mentioned it on either one of the shows. And I had a crazy day because I had a flight that day and I was out of town. But you were in New York City.
I was in New York City. Yeah. We had a crazy day. I remember going to the gym at 7 something in the morning. And, you know, like the gym radio had, they talked about like a small plane crash, or that's what I thought it was, a small plane crash. Yeah. On a building, I didn't take it that seriously just because I thought it was something that was like, there was no casualties or anything like that. And I got into our office and one of our interns had his feet up on the desk and was looking at the Today Show. And I thought I was watching a replay and they showed the other plane, you know, the other tower getting hit. And it was really a crazy story just in that, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but myself and that intern who was from Pennsylvania, he's now still works at ESPN, were going to interview someone who had served a year and a day in a federal prison for the first World Trade Center attack that happened like 8 years earlier. So it was the coincidence of all coincidences.
Whoa. That's crazy.
That was pretty eerie. So
that was 94, right? I
think it was a van that was driven into the base of the, and it was, we were going to National Rent a Car to make this drive into the middle of Pennsylvania. And then, you know, all heck broke loose. And so we get evacuated. The ESPN magazine offices were 19 East 34th Street. They were diagonal from the Empire State Building. And at one point, I mean, you guys are on the West Coast, so maybe it was, you know, it's way earlier in the day, but they were talking about how there was going to be all these planes were still up in the air. And so it sounded like it was a very coordinated attack. And I think you're thinking absolute worst because you've already seen this horrific catastrophe. And we're at the Empire State Building. You're thinking, okay, the World Trade Center is definitely a landmark. Well, that's right across the street from where we are. So they evacuate us. Oh, before this happened, this is something like when you're in an office, I don't know how you felt about this, but when you're a little kid and you have these fire drills or bomb drills or whatever, you always know who's in charge. It's some teacher or principal. When that happened for us, we're in this building and the people who you thought were in charge, because they were the people in charge of ESPN magazine, they are not in charge of, like, they didn't know anything about that. So nobody knows what we're supposed to do. Yeah, you know, we're in a building because you never prepared for that.
No.
And so eventually there was a woman in our office who was like in charge of finance. She talked to somebody at Disney because ESPN is owned by Disney. And they evacuated us to another ESPN office, which was like over on Park Avenue. But that place was closer to the UN. So I'm thinking, well, that's probably a target. We had a coworker who we're all friends with who lived in Battery Park City. Nobody could get a hold of her because all the cell phones were all jammed. And, you know, about 2 hours later, we all ended up walking all over because people were kind of stranded there because they couldn't get on trains or anything. If you didn't live in New York City, I mean, I did. So you ended up walking from hospital to hospital to see if you could donate blood. And there's like one specific kind of blood that you probably know what type it is.
Yeah, that's, it's rare. Like, so O's are universal donors. Yeah. So like when I give, I'm O positive, I think. So that's, they wanted O, because that you could give it to anybody or whatever.
Yeah, all the rest of us were like useless to them. So we'd wait in line, there'd be hundreds of people, and you go to the next hospital and they were like, no. And then, you know, by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you kind of like, okay, then you just, everybody ended up in like bars, just kind of like in shell shock. Because people were stranded. They didn't know, like they couldn't get back to where they were going, where they came from. And it was really surreal for the next, I don't know, few weeks.
What I'm trying to remember, it's funny when we were in a room with like Keely, who was
How old?
I was in first grade.
Okay, yeah.
So do your parents not let you know anything of what's going on?
My babysitter told me. And okay. I really didn't know. I thought that a plane had landed on top of a building. I didn't really get what was happening. But like for you guys, there's a pre and a post 9/11. For me, that's just the world I grew up in, yeah, post 9/11. So it's interesting hearing your thoughts about it.
We had a guy in our office, Kieran Darcy. I don't know if he still works at ESPN. He was relatively new. He'd been a basketball player at, I want to say, Princeton or some Ivy League school. And he'd been in our office for like 2 months. And his dad worked in the World Trade Center. Wow. And it was tragic for him. And I had a good friend whose dad worked in the World Trade Center, and he happened to be off that day. And then what was the hardest part was, like, I grew up not that far from New York City. And I remember, like, my brother called, and a guy he grew up with worked for one of the firms there. And it was a guy, I don't say I grew up with him because I'm 6 years younger, but I knew him really well when I was a little kid. And so you start, it would be like, hey, remember so-and-so. And it would, like, you'd get like three or four of these calls, and you'd just be kind of reeling from people who perished in that.
Yeah. My dad worked at the time at the at Logan Airport, where a couple of the planes, and he was working that morning where they originated and stuff. And he said, he told me then, it's like FBI, like they were scrambled. Like they knew something was going on, but not enough to stop it or whatever. But it wasn't like it was completely, there was something that was going on, he said, that morning. It was crazy. And yeah. It's insane. But yeah, but for someone like you, Keely, where that's your only, like, it definitely changed our lives. Like, it used to be, I was an engineer at the time. I could go to the airport, fly to San Jose. I could get there for Southwest like 15 minutes before the flight was going to go. Like, everything's changed since then. But that's the only world you've known.
Yep. Yeah. It's crazy.
I remember getting on, I don't think I got on a plane for maybe another month. It might have been for like the Texas OU game. And you'd look around at who was on the plane with you and everything. Yeah. And, just it was like
Marshalls or
it was just kind of just such a different time. Like we had so many fake bomb threats that were, I guess they were real. Yeah, they're fake bomb threats. Were called into like our building because it was near the Empire State Building, so you'd always have to evacuate. And I never, like, I hated going on the subway in the first place, but I just thought that was the worst place because it just seemed like it was so accessible. Somebody could walk in there and do a ton of damage that I never wanted to get in there. You know, Disney had this crisis counselor come in to kind of speak to us because we had to work. We worked that week, and I felt like there were a lot of people who weren't working in New York City that week, but we went in on the Friday because I think, you know, it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I remember listening to some of my coworkers, a lot of them had kids then, or, you know, had families already, and they would just talk about going at different times because they didn't want to go through Penn Station at rush hour because you were just trying to minimize your risk. And
minimize your exposure to any kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I worked in a building in El Segundo. That's the tallest building near the airport. And, we were high up, and so you're worried, like, oh, we're in like the tallest building around. This is crazy. And we would overlook the runways at LAX. And so if you just peeked out the window, you would see planes landing and, you know, every minute, like every day. And then for 4 or 5 days or whatever it was, a week, nothing, you know, with like one plane a day, maybe and it would be like this big deal when a plane would come in. It changed everything. You know, I had a rental car for like 4 or 5 days because I was up in the Bay Area. I had a flight that day and obviously it was canceled. I had to drive the car back down. But a lot of people, if you didn't have a car already, you couldn't get one because it just, everything shut down. And my car was at Park One in LAX and I couldn't get to it for like 4 or 5 days. They wouldn't let you through. And the only thing I could compare it to, I put it on my Facebook thing today. When I got my car, it was still Sepulveda shut down, like driving right through. And like normally it's just packed, you know, cars everywhere, nothing. I got dropped off at like In-N-Out, walked to Park One and got my car. And I'm the only car driving out of there. And it was like the most surreal thing. And the only thing I could compare it to was back in the riots for LA, like in 92, when they had curfews and like the freeways and everything were just shut down. And you would just look outside at USC and be like, how are there no people anywhere? And but it was crazy. But I knew you were in New York and I was like, well, we haven't. Yeah, I didn't really plan to go another 15 minutes.
Sorry. Yeah.
No. It's not.
I have a good friend.
I feel
bad
we didn't mention it before.
I have a good friend. He worked on Monday Night Football and I want to say the Giants played the Broncos. And so that was obviously Monday night. And the next day they were all stranded. And he was like, how am I going to get home? and it's in Denver. And he looked at the guy next to him. And I might like, when I hear this, think this story, I always think it's like the guy next to him was John Candy or something. He was like, the guy's like, I'm renting a car. You want to ride with me? And he rides with this complete stranger literally across the country.
Wow.
So everybody who was in New York had some weird story.
Yeah. It seemed like you all knew somebody. I mean, you, how could you not? Like you knew.
It was, I mean, for a long time, it didn't feel like it was, it happened that long ago. And now that I live out here, and just so much has happened since then, you're kind of like, okay, it does seem like a long time ago.
Yeah. I remember like the 10-year thing. I was like, holy crap, it's like 17 years now. It's like insane.
Yeah. When you start looking at rosters, like USC puts a date of births on there. I'm like, man, you start seeing guys that like, these kids probably don't even, they may have been alive, but they have no, you know, they were too young to even know what was going on TV.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bruce Feldman, I've tried to wrap it up before, but I'm sorry I mentioned that late, but I'm glad, I love that you could tell the story. It's a day none of us should forget. So as Americans, well, that's Keely Orr, Bruce Feldman. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in to the Peristyle podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.